Each time I entered a new bomb shelter, people wanted to know if I'd seen any bombs and was it safe to go home. At one shelter, there was a fine row going on. A man wanted to smoke his pipe in the shelter. The warden would not allow it. The pipe smoker said he'd go out and smoke it in the street, where he'd undoubtedly be hit by a bomb, and then the warden would be sorry. At places where peat is available, it's being consumed on great quantities at night. I have seen a few pale faces, but very few. How long these people will stand up to this sort of thing, I don't know. But tonight, they're magnificent. I've seen them, talked with them, and I know. London Calling, broadcast by Edward R. Murrow to America, August 16, 1940. In September 1939, the talk was of the Navy, the ring of steel that would starve the Germans. Today, the Royal Air Force has captured the respect and admiration which has traditionally been given to the Royal Navy. On the day the war was declared, any man who predicted that after a year of war, including only 10 weeks of battle, Britain should be without effective allies and faced with the prospect of invasion would have been considered mad. Invasion is now one of the favorite topics of conversation. These Londoners know what they're fighting for now. Not Poland or Norway, not even for France, but for Britain. London Calling, broadcast by Edward R. Murrow to America, September 3, 1940. Catherine Saxon, an unusual American correspondent, reporting on the war in Europe, is murdered in her London digs. But news of her death is concealed by her powerful and politically savvy American father. Scotland Yard, accompanied by an agent from the U.S. Department of Justice, soon to become the FBI, pays a visit to our lead protagonist, Maisie Dobbs, and Maisie is asked to work with the American agent to uncover the truth about young Catherine Saxon's death. But Maisie is torn. She's balancing the demands of solving the dangerous case in the midst of bombs dropping from the skies, only complicating her deep need to protect Anna, the young evacuee she has grown to love and wants to adopt. And as the book's blurb adds, quote, entangled in an investigation linked to the power of wartime propaganda and American political intrigue being played out in Britain, Maisie will face losing her dearest friend and the possibility that she might be falling in love again, end quote. You know, sometimes it takes a while for a story to hit its groove. Such was today's book for me. Part of a long-running series of Maisie Dobbs mysteries, my guess is that readers familiar with the lead characters could jump into the storyline immediately. For me, it took a while to warm up to them. But I'll agree, I found the characters and the situation they find themselves in, the Blitz in London, interesting enough from the first page to keep reading. And so we join our story, set in London in the midst of the World War II Blitz, bombs dropping, fires burning, people dying. That Nazi attack from the skies on the civilians of London quickly becomes a central character of the novel. For in 1940, those brave citizens of London, praised by no less than American radio journalist Edward R. Murrow, whom we heard at our introduction, in brief, real-time quotes open many of the chapters. It is a city all too often in flames at night, and it all puts a unique and can't take our eyes away from the destruction narrative drive to the novel. In the first pages of our story, our lead character and sleuth, Maisie Dobbs, and her dear friend Pris Partridge come to know the up-and-coming American journalist Catherine Saxon one fateful night as they drive their volunteer ambulance, joining together to bring relief and succor to the victims of the Blitz. It's a life and death contribution Maisie and her dear friend, as middle-aged matrons committed to their role as volunteers, forces them to go deep into the destruction their city is suffering, driving their ambulance even as the Nazi planes drone overhead. And Kate Saxon, the young, surprisingly assertive journalist, she's a young woman in 1940, for heaven's sake, joins them to gain insight firsthand on what it's like to live and hopefully survive as bombs drop on the city from high above. Kate Saxon, you see, is keen to be one of Murrow's boys, reporters making a name for themselves back in America through their riveting live radio reports from the war-torn city of London. And Kate Saxon, brief though her exposure to Americans was during that first time radio broadcast, was a surprising hit. The world that Macy, Kate, Pris knew all too well is a world of UXBs, or unexploded bombs. A sprawling river city where those brave enough to drive the city streets at night did so without the aid of street lamps, and all too often had to dodge both gaping bomb holes and neighborhoods literally on fire. It's a true life world, told through the magic of fiction, of daring young airmen as well, including a smattering of young Canadians and Americans eager to join the fight in the air overhead against Hitler's Germany, even as the U.S. of A. struggles to stay out of this across-the-Atlantic war. Cameo appearances by the controversial American diplomat Joseph Kennedy, who is painted, not unfairly, in the novel as an isolationist and even something of a Nazi sympathizer, draws the attention of the dashing and, of course, mysterious American diplomat. He is, of course, a fellow Macy knows from a life-and-death assignment they both experienced not so long ago in Nazi-ruled Munich, Germany, the story of a previous novel. A topsy-turvy relationship Macy and her American spy come to become paramour hints at more than once in today's novel. In quieter times, Mason operates a private investigation shop, for she's a member of the minor British nobility, who is not comfortable or interested in following the expected role of noblesse oblige, instead attracted to the rough and tumble world of crime. She is quick to jump on the chance to discover the perpetrator of the whodunit, in this case, a murder, threading her way sure-footedly through the not-as-American-as-we-might-suspect world of English society. And yes, I am obviously not immune to the siren call of the ever-popular mystery set in the British Isles, or perhaps the Empire. English language rampant, but social mores and expectations just different enough to paint a different picture for us as readers. Indeed, Macy is one of those wonderful fictional characters whose inner musings bring a thoughtful and experienced sleuth to light. How can I fall in love in the midst of a threatened invasion to my homeland, she asks, even as I am on the cusp of adopting a young girl whose life Macy has come to cherish? Can I love a man whose home is across the wide Atlantic Ocean while mine is firmly rooted here in Britain? And what of all those many innocent lives I will disrupt when I announce to my police employers the murderer of the young reporter? Were the lives of all those whose secrets I unearth and whose lives are undoubtedly intertwined with that of the killer ever be the same again? Are there indeed some personal tragedies worse than living through the nightmare of nightly Nazi Luftwaffe bombings? We hear a hint of that very personal interior dialogue when we join Macy late one night or early one morning in the midst of the Blitz. She has visited a fellow she has taken an interest in her murder case, a fellow who worked at the BBC, as our story tells us. It was almost 5 o'clock in the morning when Macy was shaken awake by the young woman holding a cup of tea. At some point in the evening, Walkinshaw had called out to the same young woman, asking her to show Macy to a room with mattresses cast across the floor, rendering it a dormitory for those who worked through the night at Broadcasting House. Though it was pitch black, she heard people coming and going, and the occasional illumination from a match or a torch as another member of the staff looked for a place to lie down or to swap with someone just getting up. Macy had remained awake for a long time, feeling the building shake when a bomb came too close, or a distant crump, crump, crump of falling bombs that permeated even the many soundproof areas of the British Broadcasting Corporation. Her thoughts ricocheted between worry for Anna, for her father and Brenda, and pain from her hands, reminding her time and again of pulling her dear friend Priscilla away from the flames, of the weight she could not bear on her own and against her better judgment, the constant nagging, what if? What if? What if? And now, awake to face another day, Macy's attention was again focused on the death of Catherine Saxon. Kate's brother had been in London, and it appeared his presence was not welcomed by the reporter. But when did he leave? And what if he had not left England, but was still in the country? What did that mean? Was Walkinshaw trustworthy? And was the information he'd given her a hook? Could she start to wind in the reel and bring in the killer? Not without bait. And Macy had to find just the right bait. Agent Mark Scott might have it, but so might Jenny Barrington, Catherine's friend from college, and a missing link thus far. Macy sipped the hot, sweet tea. She would see Jenny Barrington today and Mark Scott. Then she would go home to Kent, home to those she loved, home to the people she thought about constantly and who were causing her to reconsider everything she might have seen about her future. First, she would make her way to a small Italian restaurant in Marylebone Lane, where a man named Pete would be serving hot food for people who had not slept, people who now had to go to work, as today was another normal day of life in a city, London. People who, for just a few hours until the next blitz, would be free from the rumble of guns and the dread that enveloped them when they lay awake and listened in the dead hours of the night. To sum it all up, I want to quote from another reviewer of The American Agent, a Macy Dobbs novel. She writes, quote, "I think one thing I appreciate most about Jacqueline Winspear's Macy Dobbs series is the author allowing her heroine and those in her universe to experience life's ups and downs without pulling any punches. Macy has experienced tremendous loss in her life, but manages to take the losses and incorporate them into her psyche, growing and learning, however painfully, from each one. Her life representative of our shared human experience, making it easy to empathize with Maisie and her route for happiness. Winspear is a master of historical suspense, and her respect and admiration for her characters is always evident. While each Macy Dobbs is a not-to-be-missed experience, The American Agent is a series standout." End quote. Couldn't have said it better myself. What a good read. Give it a little time. If it's your first time reading a Macy Dobbs novel, as I said at the opening, give it a bit of time. Let the story slowly envelop you. I think you will be glad you did. The American Agent, a Macy Dobbs novel by Jacqueline Winspear. It's available at all of our fine local public libraries, including, of course, the West Lafayette Public Library. Thank you for listening.